The Tom Woods Show, episode 1963.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, I don't know about you, but I am running into a lot of progressives saying, look, police, fire, schools, these are all great examples of socialism. Well, let's focus on that school example. I've got a free ebook called Education Without the State that makes a pretty darn good case for a stateless approach to education. Pick it up at nostateeducation.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. All right, maybe some of you haven't reached quite this conclusion, but I think most people listening have decided that probably the differences that exist within the United States are pretty much irreconcilable at this point. And so we have to start thinking of something other than if we just pass a law or if we just elect this person. We need to start thinking about the bigger picture here and what we can do to make life livable for us, because this situation is not livable with everybody at each other's throats and each one wanting to impose a different way of looking at the world on the other. So we do have to think about the S word, secession. Nothing wrong with secession, perfectly humane way to settle a situation precisely like this. And I want to talk about the practicalities of it, the practical questions involved, not so much the theoretical or constitutional ones. So joining me to do that today is our old friend, historian Brian McClanahan, who is the host of the Brian McClanahan Show. Remember, Brian is spelled B-R-I-O-N. I urge you to check out the Brian McClanahan Show. Brian has a website, which is brianmcclanahan.com. You'll see all his books and all the stuff he's working on, his academy. The books he's written are very, very helpful. He's got books on the presidency and on the Constitution, the Founding Fathers. Honestly, he's one of my favorite historians out there. So, Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Tom. Appreciate it.
All right. You and I are just going to talk. We're going to talk like I called you on the phone because I'm frustrated about the way the world is going. And you're going to just help talk me through it. Okay. That's this episode. That's it. All right. But in particular, I want to focus on secession, but not from the angle we've normally taken. I mean, we can make constitutional arguments for secession. I can make moral arguments, but I don't want to do that. Well, maybe the moral arguments, but the constitutional stuff, the historical stuff, we've done that before. I want to talk about, suppose we were to reach the conclusion that it really is irreconcilable and it's best for people just to go their separate ways. What would that look like? How would it actually happen? That's the kind of thing I want to know. So one of the objections that gets raised a lot is if you say such and such state wants to secede from the Union, then I'm sure you already know this one. You get, well, what about the national debt? Why should the other 49 or 48 or 40 states have to bear that entire burden? Shouldn't it be broken up, you know, I don't know, by population or something? Like, shouldn't they have to pay something before they leave? Or what about all these obligations of the U.S. government? They've gotten all these nice benefits, and now they leave without having to pay any of the obligations. Is there an answer to that?
Well, I think so. I mean, I think one way you could look at that is, number one, first of all, there would have to be a negotiation in that way. And we know that this happened in 1860 when South Carolina left the Union. They sent commissioners to Washington, D.C. to try to purchase federal property, including Fort Sumter. So they were already there thinking about this problem. Okay, we've got these federal forts. We have arsenals. There's federal property. Let's try to work out a way that we can make some payments on this or buy it outright, however you want to do it, so that we can solve that problem. But on the other hand, I mean, if we looked at it simply by population, that's saying, well, the national debt is X amount of trillions of dollars. And so everybody that's in the state has to pay, you know, $30,000 a head or something like that. They have to absorb that debt. But what if the federal property there was never purchased by the federal government to begin with? What if that property was simply given to the federal government by the state? And so would that property then be the state's property that's leaving? Would the federal government have to purchase that property from the state? I mean, there are many different ways to think about this. I think there would have to be negotiation somewhere as far as the debt. Would the state be required? Could you divide it by 50 and say, okay, well, this state's leaving, so we'll take the X amount of quadrillion dollars, which is going to be before too long, and we'll take that on? Or how are we going to work this out? But I think it would have to be negotiated. That's something that was already thought of in 1860, and I don't think anything's really changed. Would the federal government be willing to negotiate? That's the question. They weren't in 1860. I don't know how receptive they would be today in 2021 or 2022 if we're talking about this now. But that is a major obstacle, but I think one that can be overcome if you have people who are thinking logically and in the name of peace, which we know may not be the case when you talk about the nincompoops in the establishment.
Right, right, right. Of course, we're not even supposed to be talking about this issue, but I would say there has never, certainly in my lifetime, been more of a sense that this has to be the solution. Even if not everybody is giving voice to that opinion right now, in the pit of their stomachs, they know there's no chance of reconciliation between the various groups in American society at this point. We just see the world differently. Some people want to lord it over others, and others don't want to be lorded over. And there's really no way to reconcile that. Now, another problem that arises reminds me of something I asked you on a previous episode. I said, suppose you have a case where there's a country and there's a part of that country that wants to secede, but we know for a fact that they want to secede for the express purpose of oppressing some portion of its people. Do we allow that secession? Now, the problem with do we allow that secession is as soon as you start saying, well, we can't allow that, then they're never going to allow any secession. They'll never find it to be sufficiently pure. But your answer was, as I recall, we solved that problem with more secession, not less. Mm-hmm. And I think that may be the answer to the question I'm going to ask you now. What about the different red parts of blue states? You know, there are blue states where there are parts of them that can't stand the big city that rules over them. I mean, upstate New York didn't like Cuomo from the start. So that's, you know, that would be an issue there. There are parts of California with a lot of normal people, parts of Oregon with a lot of normal people. And if they secede, they're going to get even bluer and crazier. So is the solution that the red parts ought to break off from the rest of the state? And red parts, by the way, I don't just mean like Republican Party voters. I mean anybody who just wants to live his own life.
Right. You mean normal people, as
normal
you said.
Normal people,
it's
yeah.
It's normal people, right? We'll have the normal people republic. I think so. I mean, look, why do we have to have states that are this big and from this mile to this mile, it has to be this state? Now, we know part of that, of course, is the design of the United States. I mean, the states have all the power in this, right? I mean, the states created the central authority. They also create the counties and the cities. So that is an issue. But if we are firmly committed to decentralization, well, the United States had 4 million people in it in 1790. The state of Alabama, where I live, has 4 million people in it today. Are you telling me that you couldn't decentralize Alabama? Or you couldn't decentralize, as you say, California, particularly California or Texas or some of these larger states, New York? Certainly they could be decentralized. And then we could start talking about real representative government. And I think that's something that should be in the conversation. Or why can't you say, okay, well, we're going to let Southern California go and Northern California can stay with the United States if they want to. I mean, that would be possible. They could vote to leave California. So the naysayers would say, well, that's going to create a crazy scenario where everyone secedes down to the individual because they're not going to like any government. But I don't think that would be the case. People do want to have a government that reflects their views. They do want to have a government that represents their views. And so if you could somehow take these states and get them to be smaller, smaller is better. Small is beautiful. I mean, this is something we should all be talking about because that does better represent the American idea of self-determination and self-government. So more secession is great. I mean, I don't think we should stop at just saying the 50 states can go. Why can't we divide up these states into smaller states as well? Why do we need 50 states? Why not 100 or 200 or, you know, 300? There's nothing in the Constitution that says you can't do this as long as the state agrees to it. So I think more secession is better than less secession.
Well, how about this one? I had somebody who's a regular listener say this the other day. If a state broke off from the United States or a small group of states, this small country would be, and he didn't give exact details of what he had in mind, but would be overtaken or dominated in some way by China. Now, I know that may sound ridiculous, but I do think people fear that if you're a small country, you're just a sitting duck for domination by bigger countries. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think that's the case because obviously it can be, But there are plenty of small countries in Europe right now that are not being overtaken by China. Like, why would it just be Michigan and a few? Like, why would that be the only? And not to mention the logistics of that seem quite challenging for China to pull off. Not saying they couldn't, but if they were inclined to do that, there are a lot of small countries all over the world that they could start with. It seems like just a scare scenario to get you not thinking in original ways.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, if you go back to 1788, though, and you go to the Virginia Ratifying Convention, and you look at what Edmund Randolph was saying, if you go back and read his speeches, they're not really about the Constitution at all. In fact, he still says there that he's worried that the Constitution is going to be awful. But his main point was that if we don't form this union, Virginia's going to be picked off. Essentially, this argument that you're making. Well, France will come in and they will form an alliance with some state, and then Virginia's going to get into war with France or Great Britain. Take your pick. I mean, those are the two bullies at the time. So this is going to be the problem. We need to be in the union to protect ourselves. That's always been a selling point for a larger union of states. Now, China is going around the world and buying up all kinds of natural resources. I mean, if you want to get cobalt in Africa, they're trying to buy all that up. So the fact is, China is using economic imperialism to try to control places. And if you bring up Michigan, they're buying water out of Michigan. So that could be a potential problem. But as you said, logistics would be such that China would have a hard time getting to Michigan. We'll just take that. We're going to have Michigan. Well, they got to go through Canada. There's the rest of the United States. I mean, how are they going to do this? You'd also have to assume that there would be such a corrupt government in Michigan that they would want to sell their souls to China. They would forego any type of interest in Republican government or some type of, I mean, even fleeting the idea of the old ways where China, you know, we don't really want to be in line with China. We'd rather be in line with, you know, the United States or Canada. We can still have a very good relationship with these entities. Why does it have to be China? So I think just because you secede, that doesn't mean you're going to somehow become an evil dictatorship and you're going to want to, have the Chinese or some other, you know, you're not going to have some third world thug come in and control the state. I don't think that would be the case. The state constitution would still hold, and those state constitutions still have, you know, requirements that you have a Republican form of government. So I just don't see that being possible. I mean, it's possible. I don't see it being probable or plausible in our current geopolitical environment that something like that would happen.
Folks, let's take a brief moment for me to spread some happiness. What do I mean by that? Every month, and I checked, I subscribed August 13th, 2019. So every month for 2 years, I have received a piece of happiness in my mailbox. And if you want to be a hit with your significant other, you will follow in my footsteps. Now, what is that bit of happiness? It is the Happily Date Box. Every month, we get a box with a different theme inside, containing a music playlist and activities of all kinds and games and conversation starters that bring you closer together with your significant other. Sometimes it's competitive, sometimes it's cooperative, but it's always fun and relaxing. We've had boxes with an 80s theme, a Japan theme, a stargazing theme, all kinds of different things that help give us a special night together. Show your significant other that you value time together by checking out the Happily Date Box. And because you know old Woods, take 50% off your first date at tomwoods.com/date. Well, let's talk about the actual nuts and bolts then. Suppose several states decide this just doesn't work, or Ron DeSantis is going to be president of the Republic of Florida, the free state of Florida. What has to happen? We have a special state secession convention to make the decision. Just describe the process.
Right. Well, this is where you get into the question of legitimacy. And there are many secession groups in the United States today, but most of these groups are led by people who decide on their front porch they're going to create a secession party and they're going to create a secession group and they're going to form their own government. And they're just going to run out there and say, we're the government. Well, who's going to follow that? Right. So if you go back to the American War for Independence and you look at what was happening there, well, the state legislatures, colonial legislatures at that time, but the state legislatures ultimately chose delegates to go to the First and Second Continental Congresses. So these were extra legal congresses. They weren't de jure legislative bodies, but they were de facto, but they had the legitimacy of the colonies/states. I mean, Jefferson's already calling them states in 1774. So they have that authority of those people, of those communities, those political communities. So that's the first thing we have to overcome. You have to have some already established apparatus to do this. And when you bring up Florida, the way that it worked in 1860 and 61 is that, yes, the state legislatures called elections for conventions, and those conventions met and then decided if they were going to leave the union. In some cases, they said no at first. Virginia, for example, said no. In some cases, it was unanimous, like in South Carolina. But it was through a convention process. And that's a purely American thing. If you go back and look at all the times conventions have been used in American history, the United States really was the first place to do this. The Philadelphia Convention, the convention that drafted the Constitution, it was an extra legal body. They had elections for delegates, they were sent, and they came up with a plan, and then the states could accept or reject it. But that was done in convention. You see this being done over and over again with state constitutions. Well, we want to have in Virginia, for example, the most famous is the Virginia Constitutional Convention of 1829 and 1830, when they rewrote the state constitution. So we use these all the time. The Hartford Convention, if you want to just go to New England, where they were deciding if they wanted to have some type of resolutions against the general government because of the War of 1812. I mean, that was a convention. And when you look at nullification in 1832, that was the convention with South Carolina. So the convention is the real vehicle to get it done. But there are some other options that you could use too that some people are talking about. And one of those would be for simply the states. And I'll get into this with the Supreme Court decision. We can kind of talk about this. I don't want to just go on and on, but one could be the states actually making this happen if they wanted to, and that would be perfectly legal according to the Supreme Court. So that's an interesting way to get this done. Do you want me to go into that, or you want to take a pause
No. I want to hear that. Yes.
Okay. So everyone points to Texas v. White as the definitive answer.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about what you thought about that.
Right. Texas v. White. When you bring up the issue of secession, well, the Supreme Court's already decided it's illegal. They didn't actually say that.
And by the way, this is a case from 1869, just for people to know.
Right. So you have 1869. What happens is there's an issue with debt and bonds and some other things with the state of Texas. And the Supreme Court decides Samuel Chase was the Chief Justice. Of course, he had been in the Lincoln cabinet. Now he's Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And they issue a ruling that says that unilateral secession was unconstitutional. Now, logically, why would they say anything else? If they came out and said that unilateral secession was constitutional, well, that would invalidate the entire war, because for 4 years, Lincoln has claimed that there was no secession. It didn't legally happen. It was simply a bunch of states in rebellion. So the Supreme Court was going to provide cover for 4 years of war. And Lincoln said, of course, he didn't need a declaration of war because these states were simply in rebellion. The Supreme Court said you can't unilaterally secede from the Union. But what they did leave open was the other states to have the possibility of booting states out of the Union. And the reason they did that is because if you think during Reconstruction, what happened is after the war is over and we have Lincoln's 10% plan, which became Johnson's essentially 10% plan, you get very lenient terms on Reconstruction, and all the Southern states come back in the Union very quickly. And the radical Republicans say, oh my gosh, we can't do this. You guys were just fighting us. We're not going to let you back in the Union without some type of punishment. So they booted them out. They said, we're going to take a vote and you're no longer in the Union. They passed the first Reconstruction Act in 1867, which established military districts in the South. They removed the states from the Union. So what Chase did was provide cover for that. Well, if the states say you're not in the Union anymore, well, then you're not in the Union. So what could happen is that, let's say enough red states decide that they don't like California. California is a problem. And so they go into Congress and you've got a Republican president. Of course, we know the Republican Party would never do this because they're a bunch of spineless fools, but California is an issue. We're going to get rid of California. So they go into Congress and they say, we're going to vote to remove California from the Union. The Congress does it. The president signs it. It becomes law. California is no longer part of the Union. It's simply just whatever they want it to be. It's a state of California. They could revoke the state status of California. Theoretically, according to Texas v. White, they could do this and make that territorial property again. They could do whatever they want with it. because the Constitution says the United States can admit states. It doesn't say they can't admit states. So under a loose construction idea, if it doesn't say you can't boot a state out of the union, that means you can do it, right? So you could use the Constitution in a fraudulent way, of course, we would actually say, but according to the Supreme Court, this would work. So all the red states could boot California, Oregon, and Washington out of the union. You could say you're on your own now. We don't want you in the union anymore. And that would be that. In fact, the leader of the California secession discussion has brought this up. He said, this is exactly how we need to do it. We need to pressure the Congress to vote us out of the union. And that's how we're going to leave. We don't need a convention. We don't need to have some type of violent reprisal or anything like that. Of course, nobody wants that at all. It shouldn't even happen that way. We just ask the Congress to let us go and we go. And that's it. Wouldn't that be a beautiful thing? And if you're thinking logically, well, wouldn't it be great if Kamala Harris and Nancy Pelosi and Dianne Feinstein and all these people are no longer in the general government? They're just gone. And because they're in California, they can go. Kamala Harris could be the president of the Republic of California and they could just have at it all day. And I think that's an interesting scenario that could potentially happen again, but you'd have to rely on the Republican Party to have a backbone. And we know that's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's the tricky part. I guess one of the main obstacles is not procedural or anything like that. It's ideological. It's that people have been taught to demonize the idea of secession because they associate it with the Civil War or slavery. But not just that. I mean, after all, the Pledge of Allegiance says one nation indivisible, which no doubt also is an oblique reference to the Civil War. So the idea of secession in the minds of Americans, I think, is more difficult to wrap their heads around than it is for a lot of Europeans and people all over the world, because they view the Union as sacred. Well, then this can't be allowed. It's blasphemy is when you say something that's wrong. What's the word I'm looking for? Not blasphemy.
I would say it is blasphemy because they believe in the Union as a religious sacrament almost. I mean, this is, the Union has become, in a way, the thing that you shall not ever say anything negative about. I mean, politics is our religion now. I know you talked about that in one of your recent episodes. And with that, the sacred documents are the Constitution, the Declaration. I mean, these are relics. And so to say somehow that the Union is no longer working and we should get out, I mean, the right paints the right now, not the left, but the right paints the Confederacy that way now. I mean, these people were un-American. They weren't even Americans. They left the Union. They're not Americans any longer. And I think this is a dangerous thing to do. But yes, you're right. I mean, this is the major problem with it. We're taught from the time we're five up until, you know, you graduate from college and, you know, the Union is sacred. The Union is indissolvable. You can't get rid of it. And so we're left with the only solution is vote better. I mean, where does that get us all the time? So we're seeing that that doesn't really ever work because the Republican Party is ridiculous. Or if you're on the far left, I mean, the Democrat Party, they have as much problems with the Democrats as, you know, people on the right have with the Republicans at times. So these holy relics of Union and the Constitution and the Declaration and the way it's portrayed, I mean, this is the real problem, as you said. It's a mindset that's dangerous because we don't actually teach the Declaration, for example, as it is, which is it's not a founding document. It's a defounding document. It's a document of secession, and we don't look at it that way.
But even people who don't view these documents so reverentially, so even people who think, why should I care about the Constitution or the Declaration? They were written by dead white men. They still don't favor secession, overwhelmingly. They still don't want it. And it's not because you're committing sacrilege against sacred texts and institutions. It's just because, doggone it, the natural order of things is for us to rule and you to sit there and take it.
Right. I mean, I think that's it. It's their ideology is top down, one size fits all government works for them, because if they're in power, well, then they can do anything they want. I mean, the socialists, if you want to just say that, you know, the democratic socialists, whatever they want to call themselves, or the progressives, whatever group on the left we're talking about, thrives on centralization of power. So that is a real problem. To get those people on board is going to be hard. It's also going to be hard to get the neoconservatives and the Straussians and all the people that are certainly interested in this proposition nation, you know, Gettysburg Address myth. That's another whole group that you got to deal with. They're on the right. So you've got two real factions that are creating problems. And I think the way you persuade those on the left is, well, look, Michael Bolton is so good at this. He'll say, well, you know, what about issues like, you know, take your favorite leftist talking point and say, well, do you think that that's working for you? I mean, is this really, or could you potentially in your state have it better if you just controlled your own state? I mean, think of Romney, Mitt Romney. When he was governor of Massachusetts, you had Romney care, right? It was universal health care. You had that. Or even think about the recent Supreme Court ruling knocking down the eviction moratorium of the CDC. Gavin Newsom went out to social media very quickly and said, this doesn't affect us because we've got our own eviction moratorium in the state of California. So you can't evict people here anyways. It doesn't matter what the United States government says. So the left loves federalism. It works for them. Wouldn't it be better if they could have all their leftist dreams or little socialist utopia all over North America and little states? They could have it, and people could, Bernie Sanders could have his little socialist utopia in Vermont. It would be great. And then the rest of us could be free from all that stuff. I know the tyrants don't like it, but I think there's enough logical people that you could say, wouldn't this just be better for you? If you want your leftist dream, you could have it. And, you know, Kirk Sale, who was he's a founder of the Middlebury Institute.
I love that guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's a leftist. He is a hard leftist, but he's a pure secessionist because he wants to have a left-wing utopia, essentially. He doesn't like all the stuff that we don't get because there's too much compromise in D.C. Couldn't we just get our own little green republic, in Vermont? And, you know, Thomas Naylor, who was a lefty up there in Vermont and, of course, died, unfortunately, several years ago. But he was really interesting to talk about with secession because he's a leftist. And that second Vermont Republic had a lot of support. So the lefties could like it. You just have to sell it to them in the right way. And I think all of that comes down to education. I say this all the time. This is a long war. You and I might look at this and say, yeah, I mean, this is clear to us. This is so easy to think about. I mean, we've got all these little dictators running around out here saying we have to do X, Y, and Z. And people have gotten worse in the last 18 months about this. So wouldn't it be better to have real people, have real places, and we could all just kind of live and let live? And you want to do this, you do that. You don't want to do this, you do that, whatever it is. But you've got to persuade a lot of people that this idea of decentralization, federalism, whatever, secession, which is the ultimate extension of it, this would be better for Americans if we just thought how this could actually be a peaceful solution to our problems instead of a violent solution to our problems. And I think that's the key to it all.
And of course, as you say, education, if you could just say to these folks, you can have exactly what you want right now. It doesn't have to be a pipe dream you have to wait 50 years for or that you won't be alive to see. You can have it next week. And the way you go about it is through secession or through allowing the secession of others. And it's true that the true universalists who want to lord it over everybody won't be satisfied with that. But as you say, the average person who isn't really interested in that, but who wants immediate change that he can perceive that's practical and realistic, I mean, it's not impossible. They could say, well, yeah, okay, so maybe I'm not going to like the way Montana lives, but who cares? I don't live in Montana. I'll have a great California or whatever it is. Yeah. How else can we live side by side? How else can we all be in proximity to each other like this when we have completely different worldviews and we're at each other's throats all the time? I mean, there is no other answer.
Right. I mean, Americans are angry because we have one-size-fits-all government. All the never-Trumpers, all the hate Donald Trump people, why were they so angry? Because they thought their world was going to end because a guy that had views that 1940s Democrats would have found acceptable, was in power. And so he didn't hold views that 2021 Democrats find acceptable. So, I mean, this is how stupid all this stuff really is. I mean, Donald Trump was an FDR Democrat. That's all he was. Everyone would have recognized Trump as, oh yeah, he's kind of an economic nationalist. You know, that's what he would have been in 1945 when the war ended. He would have been Harry Truman. I mean, that's it. He would have been Harry Truman. So now that's conservative. So the problem with these people is they thought their world was ending because of that. Well, what if it didn't have to? What if your world, I mean, we've had 600,000 deaths due to COVID. Well, some states have done it better than others. well, what if your state didn't have these problems? And I know that's callous and say, well, we all want people to do in every state. We don't want people dying. We don't want these things. Nobody does, right? But if you can't control what happens, I can't control what happens in California or in New York or in Florida. I don't live there, right? So I can control what happens here. So I want a state, a place that's going to reflect what I want. And I'll work in that state to do that. What if all that stuff doesn't really matter? It's just noise. All that really is noise. All these things, when we look at the news and say, in New York today, there was mass murders in New York City. Well, do I live in New York City? I mean, that's terrible for New York City, but the people of New York City have to deal with that. This is essentially the situation the Democrats are saying in Afghanistan now. That's the Joe Biden speech. We're not going to fight a civil war in Afghanistan because why do we spill American blood for a place that they don't really care if we're there or not? Well, I mean, why are we going to worry about what's happening in New York City if you don't live there? So I think this is something Americans have to start accepting. We have a big place, and North America is a big place, and your political community is where you need to focus your attention, not somewhere else. That's why I always say on my podcast, think locally, act locally, because that's what you got to do. It's how you have to start living your life. You got to get the noise out for the national stuff. It's funny to make fun of it, but at the end of the day, it doesn't really affect how you live your life.
Well, here's a ham-handed segue. Well, here's a way to improve how you're living your life. Listen to the Brian McClanahan Show. See, that was terrible, wasn't it? But the sentiment is undeniable. The sentiment is one people ought to follow, because the Brian McClanahan Show, you get pure, unadulterated Brian McClanahan. There's no guests. It's just Brian sharing wisdom. So check it out, the Brian McClanahan Show, on any of the podcast platforms that you might use. There's also his website, brianmcclanahan.com. Remember, Brian with an O, brianmcclanahan.com. I'm going to put all the stuff related to Brian, his books, everything we've been talking about, McClanahan Academy, where you can learn from Brian, all kinds of stuff. I'll put all of that up at tomwoods.com/1963. Now, you have to go work for a living teaching young people and molding their minds, so I don't want to keep you any longer. Thank you, Brian.
Well, I appreciate it, Tom.
All right, folks, that's going to do it. Time is ticking away. We're getting very, very close to the 2000th episode of The Tom Woods Show, which we are going to be recording live in Orlando. It is going to be an amazing extravaganza. Costs you nothing to attend, but do please register at tomwoods2000.com. A lot of your favorites from The Tom Woods Show will be there, and we're just going to have a great old time, and I just want you to attend. So if you've been thinking, if I can possibly, stop that. Get off the fence. You know we're going to have a great time. You don't want to regret this, not being there. If you missed the 1,000th episode, well, you just can't let yourself miss episode 2000. So check out the details at tomwoods2000.com, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of The Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.